The path I was on didn't seem to want to go to where I needed it to go. I needed it to take Patty and me to the campsite, where in the morning a bus would show up and take the two of us and all the rest of our group out of the mountains and back home to Minneapolis. But instead, this path was meandering through unfamiliar meadows, down unexpected valleys, and along the sides of mountains, and there was not a living soul in sight anywhere. And it was getting to be late afternoon. The sun was going down, and I was beginning to feel a little alarmed. Funny how what's beautiful one moment can turn threatening the next, all because you thought you knew where you were headed. You thought you had everything under control, only to discover that you have no idea where you're going and you're not in control of anything. I mean, the morning had begun well enough. It was the final day of our week backpacking with our high school group through the Bighorn Mountains in Wyoming. And we set up camp at night, and we'd do that near some pristine, beautiful mountain lake, and then we would break it down in the morning. We'd load it all onto our packs, on our backs, and we'd set off down the trail to the next place we were going to camp. And each day, the other counselor and I would station one of us at the front of the group with the gazelles and the other at the back with the stragglers. And that particular day, it was my turn to bring up the rear, which meant that I would be hiking with Patty. And Patty seemed to grow slower every day. And now at the end of the week, there wasn't much left in her tank at all. It was like watching an overloaded smart car try to make it up the grapevine, you know? That's always kind of fun. By the time the two of us got to the lunch spot, the rest of the group had already been there so long, they were getting ready to build a permanent settlement. So they left as quickly as they could and continued on to the designated campsite. And after we had eaten our lunch, the two of us struck out after them until we arrived at a fork in the path. And that's when I reached in my backpack for the map to confirm our direction, only to discover I had no map. My partner had ended up packing both sets of maps in his backpack. Thank you very much. And by this time, he was long gone down the trail. Now, I had studied the map before we set out that morning and thought I remembered it pretty well. And I stood there on the rise to the right that had kind of a flat top that looked like what I remembered from the map. And the fork in the trail, it went up and over the top and just like it seemed like it should. So we headed that way. That made sense. Up and over and then down the other side. This seemed right. I was confident for a while, but then doubts began to creep in a little bit at a time. Was this right? Were we on the correct path? I mean, it seemed like it until it didn't. Through a valley, rest stop. Across a creek, rest stop. An hour of hiking became another hour, and then another hour after that. And I was moving from frustrated to annoyed to uncertain to anxious to panicky. All the emotions that tend to take control when things aren't going the way they're supposed to. The way you had intended, the way you had planned. When you think you may be on the wrong path, but you just don't know what to do next. And all I wanted to do was for all of this to be over, to sit down at the campfire with the rest of the group and be done. Where was this trail even taking us? I suspected we had taken the wrong option long before I was willing to admit it. I think that's the most common response when you've turned down the wrong path in life. You just keep powering ahead, maybe out of fear that you'll turn around too soon, or because you think that by sheer determination you can make this come out right. But you just keep wandering further and further away from where you wanted to be. As it became more and more obvious that I didn't have a clue where we were, finally, in desperation, we turned around, we retraced our steps back to the lunch site, and when we stumbled in, we finally met another backpacker. And I explained our situation, and he was like, "Oh yeah, I've seen that group. They're camped about a half mile down that path. I'll take you," he said as he shouldered Patty's pack. "We should be there in about 15 minutes. I was like, 15 minutes? We had missed that rotten campsite by 15 minutes because I kept choosing the wrong path, thinking I knew what I was doing, could rely on my own wisdom. Though in the end, what Patty and I really needed was someone to take us to the right place, to the place we belonged, somebody to do that for us. And that, I think, is kind of what life is like. We're on a path, walking toward a destination, and all along the way we have decisions to make and choices to choose, and we spend a lot of the time stumbling around, lonely, not knowing where we're going. And the promise of where we want to be just seems farther and farther away. And what we need most is a hope that can keep us going, and the promise that someone can bring us to where we need to be. So we're finishing up our series on Proverbs today, and we've been asking over the last several weeks if there is a wisdom available for our very confused and confusing world. Is there a way to get us down the road to our final destination? And what I want to do this morning to finish up is to take maybe a slightly different take on the book of Proverbs, and it centers, of all things, on a tree and our journey to it. If you look at the end of the Bible, in the book of Revelation, it speaks of a tree. In Revelation 22, verses 1 to 5, John is describing his vision of heaven, our final home, the destination to which we're all hoping to arrive. And he writes this, he says, "Then the angel showed me the river of the water of life, as clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb down the middle of the great street of the city. And on each side of the river stood the tree of life, bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations, and no longer will there be any curse." That's our goal. That's our hope. That's our destination. That place where the tree of life stands and the saved are gathered around it, the community of God who have been brought home to the place where they were meant to be. And it'll be like finally getting to your campsite after a long, painful, frightening hike in which you were lost and uncertain and even a little desperate. But this isn't the first time we come across the tree of life. It's there way back in the beginning, in Genesis 2. Genesis 2 says, "In the middle of the garden were the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And the Lord God commanded the man, 'You are free to eat from any tree in the garden at all, but you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for when you eat from it, you will certainly die.'" So, of course, the man and the woman, they ate from the tree they weren't supposed to. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil. They reached out and they took what had not been given. And you know what happened after that, don't you? Sin, death, sadness, brokenness, blaming, hiding, shame, guilt, lostness. So God blocked access to the tree of life because Adam and Eve had chosen death. Genesis 3 says, "And the Lord said, 'The man has now become like one of us, knowing good and evil. He must not be allowed to reach out his hand and also take from the tree of life and eat and live forever.'" God loved them so much that he kept them from the tree of life because they would already spend all the rest of their days choking on the sin that they had fed themselves. A theologian by the name of Cindy Cook describes the Bible as the story of our journey. And it has a beginning and it has an ending. It's a journey from tree to tree, from the tree of life in the Garden of Eden to the tree of life in the New Eden at the end of all things. And by now, you might be wondering, what does all this have to do with Proverbs? Well, that'd be a good question. And here's the interesting, intriguing thing this morning. Did you notice it? In the reading for today, the tree of life shows up in only one other place in the Bible, here in Proverbs. And there it is, right there in verse 18. Wisdom, referred to in Proverbs with a feminine pronoun, is more precious than rubies and more desirable than anything else. She is a tree of life to those who take hold of her. Those who hold her fast will be blessed. The path from the tree at the beginning to the tree at the end goes right through Proverbs. Wisdom is the tree of life. Now, here's our problem. If only we could walk that path. If only we could stay on the right trail. Seems easy though, right? Huh? Seems pretty straightforward. Just stay on the correct path, follow the instruction, do what it says, and you'll get to where you're headed. From reading Proverbs, the path is pretty clear. There's a right way and there is a wrong way. There is the path that leads to life and there is the path that leads to death. Choose the path that leads to life. And at first glance, maybe it seems like that's what Proverbs is, a manual of do's and don'ts to improve ourselves and our standing with God. Maybe it's just as simple as the things that must be done and the things that must be avoided. Once you hear the wisdom of God, you do it. If you're foolish enough not to listen, maybe you just end up ever wandering aimlessly through an unending wilderness. But follow the words of Proverbs, you'll be okay. Stay on the right path. That's what I thought too when I was leading poor Patty down one wrong path after another, trying to get to a campsite on my own, trying to reach our destination under the strength of my own choices, my own abilities, and missing it entirely. In fact, you know what? That's my life. That's my whole life. I always think I know how to do this. I always think that this time I'm going to get it right. This time I'm going to make the right choice. This time I'm going to choose the right path. I'll figure it out on my own. I've got it under control. I always think the path I've chosen will lead me home until it doesn't. And I realized I'm as messed up as I can get. But I keep trying. I really do. With the best of intentions. Yeah. I know you do too. Because in our heart of hearts, we cling in desperation to a misguided assumption that sincerely trying really, really hard to pick the right path is going to be enough. Even as we continue down the wrong one, and that if we just keep pushing forward on our own path, it's going to lead us home, which it doesn't. The more you read Proverbs, the more you have to realize that we don't and cannot do what it says. I don't keep all my ways pure, do you? I mean, really? I ignore the things I don't want to do, don't you? I mean, really? I don't follow its wisdom. Not all the time, maybe not much of the time. I constantly battle with this notion that we've talked about the last few weeks, that life goes best when I live by the design by which God intended me for to live and for everything around me to work, instead of by my own desires. And then you know what? Sometimes I don't even like the design God came up with, and I want to design things differently. When I look at my path, I can't help but notice how crooked my steps have been. And not just now, but when I look behind me, I can see how many times I've taken the wrong path. My path has put me well on my way to being lost forever. But as it turns out, Proverbs, at its deepest level, not talking about you or me at all. As it turns out, Proverbs is not your path to walk. There's yet another tree in the Bible, not specifically referred to as the tree of life, but it is in the most profound way. It's a tree that has been twisted up into the form of a cross. The path from tree to tree goes right through the cross, and it is dripping with the blood of the Savior who has completed all righteousness for you. Paul writes in Galatians 3, he says, "For all who rely on the works of the law are under a curse. As it is written, cursed is everyone who does not continue to do everything." Not most of, not some of, everything written in the book of the law. Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law by becoming a curse for us, as it is written, cursed is everyone who's hanged on a tree. In Proverbs, there is a right way to go and a wrong way to go. And you know what? We choose the wrong way. But Jesus has chosen the right way. We're bound up by sin to choose the wrong path every single time. Just because the exhortations are there to be a better person doesn't mean that you can actually do it. There's a difference between what we ought to do and what we can do. Jesus has already walked the entire path. Christ chose the journey from tree to tree for us, and he walks right through Proverbs and right into and onto the tree on which he was hung. And that's good news, because in the end, Patty and I desperately needed someone who knew the way and could take us to where we belonged. Our path home, our path back to the tree of life, our path through Proverbs is really different than what we first imagined. We thought Proverbs was a little bit of what we could do to make it to the tree of life. Something that could just help us along the way. And as it turns out, it doesn't work that way at all. Proverbs marches us closer and closer to see who we really are and what we really need. And the more we look at Proverbs, the more we realize we have nothing. All we have is Christ. He kept every single bit of Proverbs. And his undeserved death on that tree is your restored path. Turns out that Jesus is our wisdom. Reading Proverbs with Christ at the center makes this whole story burst wide open with hope and comfort. It's not your path and never was. It's always been his. And he will lead you home. Home. To the tree of life.